Our final lesson this evening comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verses 15 through 20. Listen for a word from God to you. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us." So they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in the manger. When they saw this, they made known what had been told to them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen as it had been told them. These have been the words of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, friends, Merry Christmas. There you go. It is my privilege to welcome all of you again to worship at Broad Street Ministry on this Thursday evening. I'm delighted to see you all. It is wonderful to gather together. The vision for this was supposed to feel like we were gathering around the family piano. And I don't know if you ever had that experience growing up of gathering around a family piano. I don't know that that ever actually happened to anybody. But I sort of imagined, I have an imagined memory of gathering around my grandmother playing the piano. And Malkiah, you don't look like my grandmother. You're better at piano than my grandmother. And I treasure those memories, and I treasure the opportunity to be with all of you. So let us turn to the Lord in prayer. Eternal God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah, Tina, and Bill, Miles, and Elliot, speak to us now in the modern time, in this our metropolis. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. For you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. In the first chapter of the book of Exodus, there is the story of Pharaoh, a new Pharaoh coming to power in Egypt, and this Pharaoh is insecure. He is insecure about how many Hebrews there are. And so because he's worried that there are so many Hebrews and that they're going to go off and defect and join another nation, the Pharaoh makes the first rule of bad management, which is to not reward them for being there. He punishes them for being there. And so he enacts this incredible oppression over the Hebrews. He oppresses them and oppresses them, and the more he oppresses them, the more they multiply, and the larger in numbers they get, and the scareder and scareder he gets. And so eventually he takes drastic measures and tells all of the midwives of Egypt that they are not to when a woman from among the Hebrews delivers a baby, that she is to kill the baby boys and to let the baby girls live. And in this incredible act of civil disobedience, the midwives of Egypt defy Pharaoh. They play dumb. They say, "Man, these Hebrew women can really give birth. Because by the time we get there, man, that baby is already born and there's nothing we can really do about it. Sorry, Pharaoh, we did the best we could." And so Pharaoh sends out the edict that every Hebrew boy born is to be cast into the Nile River. Chapter 2, one such baby boy is born. And the mother hides the baby for as long as she possibly can, but you can only hide a baby for so long. And so she wraps the baby in swaddling clothes, places him in a woven papyrus basket, seals the basket with bitumen and pitch, and she floats him down the Nile. A short while later, Pharaoh's daughter is bathing in the river, and she sees among the reeds and rushes this baby crying. She takes pity on the boy, and she recognizes that this must be one of the baby boys from among the Hebrews, and so she raises the boy as her own, names him Moses. When that boy became a man, he walked out among his people. He left the palace and went into the world, and he saw that nothing had really changed since his birth. For here he saw an Egyptian slave master abusing one of the Hebrew slaves. And in a fit of rage, he kills the man. He kills the slave master. And then immediately realizing the magnitude of what he has done, he goes into hiding in the wilderness. A baby boy, born of an oppressed people, floated down the river into the palace, into the belly of the beast, We're the very daughter of the one, the architect of all this oppression, has no choice but to feel pity. This baby intervening in a broken world, and not even Pharaoh's daughter is able to change the system that wanted to kill him. Not even the daughter could soften Pharaoh's heart. Not even the arrival of an adopted grandson from among the enslaved people could change the situation. In February of 1946, the United States government informed the 167 inhabitants of the Bikini Atoll. Do people know what an atoll is? Perfect. Okay, so when a volcano, I'm going to do a quick thing about atolls, and then we're going to talk a lot about atolls. So it's good that we all know what these are. Right, so when a volcano erupts, right, and basically, you know how like a volcano is shaped like a cone, right? It's got the collapsed dome, and there's the cone around the top. So if you've got a submerged volcano, the ring around the top, that sort of shapes, that becomes an island. But it's not an actual island, it's just the ring, right? It's the top of the volcano, the top of the cone of the volcano in the shape of a ring. And in the middle is a sea, basically called a lagoon. Does this make sense? Okay, perfect. We know what atolls are. Hey, whatever else, at Broad Street Ministry, you learn a word. I didn't know what atolls were. Okay, so in February of 1946, the United States government informed the 167 inhabitants of the Bikini Atoll that they would be relocated, and I'm quoting here, for the good of mankind and to end all world wars. The 167 inhabitants were put on a boat and dropped off at an uninhabited and uninhabitable atoll 125 miles away with a few weeks' worth of food and water. And then over the course of the next 12 years, the United States government conducted 67 nuclear tests on, over, under, and near Bikini Atoll. One of these tests was the detonation of a hydrogen bomb 1,000 times more powerful than the one detonated over Hiroshima, Japan. The Bikini Atoll is now uninhabitable. Three of the islands that make up the atoll itself were vaporized by the tests, and the soil and water are now unfit for farming and fishing. Well, in 1985, the United States signed what was called the Compact of Free Association with the Marshall Islands. The Marshall Islands are a group of islands and atolls, one of which is the Bikini Atoll. And the compact stipulated that the Marshall Islands, including Bikini Atoll, were now independent. They were no longer a trusteeship of the United States Department of the Navy and the United States Department of the Interior. And that part of the deal for their independence was that the Marshallese people were free to travel and work in the United States without need of a visa. And so communities of Marshallese people settled throughout the United States, in Honolulu, Hawaii, Spokane, Washington, Costa Mesa, California, and in Springdale, Arkansas. Have any of you ever been to Springdale, Arkansas? I don't know where it is. But in Springdale, Arkansas, that is the second largest community of Marshallese people in the United States, and they found work there at the Tyson Foods factory processing, shall we say, chickens. Meanwhile, back home, rising seas flood their islands more and more every year, such that their country may not exist in a matter of decades. And in the midst of all of this nuclear proliferation, forced displacement, poverty, wage, employment, climate change, and mass migrations, a young woman was with child. The parents, young Marshallese people, both employees at the Tyson food plant, knew they could not keep the baby. They floated it down the river, where she was adopted by my sister-in-law. A girl born to an oppressed population floated down the river into the belly of the beast, to a family of heirs apparent to the universe. Her parents are both graphic designers in Washington, D.C., and they own a row house outside of Washington, D.C. And Uncle Andy and Aunt Karen have terminal master's degrees and are professionals in their field, and they own a home in Fishtown. And Grandma and Grandpa are educators and artists and golfers. She is truly in Pharaoh's palace. My niece Amelia Mary is 44 days old, and my greatest fear is that when she grows up and becomes a woman and leaves the castle, she will encounter the horror that Moses encountered. Sure, war and nuclear proliferation and rising seas and factory farming and economic enslavement, to say nothing of the fact that she is a brown woman, so there will be racism and there will be sexism. More than any of that, the horror that I feel, the greatest fear that I fear, that I feel, is the horror of her realizing that she grew up in Pharaoh's house and wondering if nothing actually changed, that the world is just as it was when she was born. I fear that she will encounter the feeling that she grew up in Pharaoh's palace and nothing ever changed as a result. It is Christmas Eve, and a baby has been born into our midst and in our text for the evening. This baby is born in a time of rebellion and oppression and occupation. This baby, as we will hear later in this text, this baby was not supposed to have been allowed to live. And that baby grew up into a man, Jesus, who saw a broken world where religious leaders took advantage of the poor and the world's most powerful empire abused its people. He was executed by the state on trumped-up charges, and that execution was witnessed to and assented to by the ones who 4 days previous to the execution hailed him as the Messiah, the chosen one of God. But the difference with that baby who grew into a man, the difference with the unpleasantness that he encountered, the horror that he encountered when he went into the world, is that on that third day after the execution, he was raised from the dead. That his death and his encounter with all of the junk of the world, the horrors of the world, was actually not the end of his story, nor was it the end of our story. For it was the fact that in his resurrection, we find that we now have some freedom to hope, freedom from fears and the enslavements that hold us back. In his birth and in his life and death and eventual resurrection, we find that there is hope for a new world. Moses found that hope when he was wandering in the wilderness tending to his father-in-law's flocks, and God comes to him in the form of the burning bush and says, "Moses, I need you back in Egypt. My people have been crying out, and you, Moses, are going to be the one to deliver them." So his arrival as a baby into Pharaoh's palace may not have changed Pharaoh's mind, but he was ultimately the one to lead them out of slavery and bondage and oppression and out of the grip of Pharaoh. And exactly 3 weeks after my beautiful, perfect, I will show you pictures later, oh, she's amazing. Exactly 3 weeks after my beloved Marshallese niece was born, the UN Climate Conference gathered in Paris. And it was the Marshallese foreign minister, a fellow named Tony de Brum, who convened what was called the High Ambition Coalition. He was the one with the energy and the charisma and the facts on the ground and the freedom to hope, who pulled together over 100 countries, rich and poor, large and small. They were the ones who actually drove the deal. He was the architect of the deal that might actually do something about climate change, the Marshallese foreign minister. At one point in the conference, Minister de Brum had the floor, and he yielded his time to an 18-year-old Marshallese girl who spoke powerfully about her hopes for her homeland and its future. And as the deal was announced, members of the High Ambition Coalition celebrated rapturously, hugging each other and shaking hands. And they, if you looked closely, you could see that they were all wearing lapel pins made of palm fronds, a symbol of the Marshall Islands, a sign of hope. I don't know what sort of world Amelia will encounter when she becomes a woman and leaves the palace. But I have some hope that maybe her homeland will still exist. I have some hope that maybe animals and the earth will not be factory farmed. I have some hope that maybe we will not be so afraid of immigrants, that maybe we will believe that they warrant jobs that we would want ourselves, that they are not just the ones who process our chickens and pick up our trash. Maybe that is the world that she will grow up in. Every Christmas, I read these stories, and I have a new reason to marvel at the miracle of the incarnation, the miracle of the fact that God was born in human form in the world as a baby. And this year, for me, it's very simple. Christ comes to us as a baby because we want to create a better world for babies. We want the best for babies. Even when we are the daughter of Pharaoh, we cannot turn away from the baby that is in the basket. Even when we are heirs apparent to the universe and we have never heard of the Marshall Islands and we don't want to go to Springdale, Arkansas, I don't want to go there. But I'm not going to turn away from the baby in the basket. We hope the best for babies. We hope that the world will be better for them than it maybe has been for us. So your Christmas message this year is really quite simple. When we get together in this room a year from tonight, will we have worked to make the world more hospitable for the baby born in our text and into our midst? Will we have cared for our planet? Will we have done what we can do to reduce gun violence? Will we have stood in solidarity with victims of police violence? Will we have welcomed the widow and the orphan and the stranger? Will we have visited the sick? Will we have done our level best to do what God is asking us and calling us to do? Will we have considered our vocation and tried to pursue it? Will we have rebuked xenophobia and sexism and racism and homophobia? Will we have done our best to vote ethically in 2016? Will we have listened to the cries of God's people and worked for their deliverance from bondage? Will we have been generous with the offerings that we lay at Christ the King's feet? To put it in the terms of the Marshallese foreign minister, will we be members of the High Ambition Coalition? Will we be members of the High Ambition Coalition? Unto us a child is born. So I don't see why not. Thanks be to God. Merry Christmas. Amen.